Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
A strange force has entered the galaxy. A future of mankind is at stake. It could only mean one thing.
Greetings, Captain.
Spock!
I do not think you realize the gravity of your situation.
The vacation is over. Now, the crew of the Starship Enterprise...
Enterprise, are you ready?
...is taking adventure where it has never gone before.
What are you standing around for? Do you not know a jailbreak when you see one?
From the mind of a madman...
Hostile force has taken control of our vessel.
Mr. Solo, full ahead.
...through the center of the galaxy...
You know we'll never make it through the Great Barrier.
To the final frontier.
Fascinating.
How often have you done this?
Actually, it's my first attempt.
Fire the rockets!
You never cease to amaze me.
Nor I myself.
This is the boldest trek of all.
Warp speed now.
Star Trek V, the final frontier.
Mr. Scott, you're amazing.
There's nothing amazing about it. I know this ship like the back of my hand.
Hello and welcome to another Star Trek special as we explore strange new worlds, seek out new life and civilizations, and get sexually excited by a giant cat that lap dances for us. Yes, it's Star Trek V, the final frontier. And joining me to know this ship like the back of his hand, is Paul Litchfield.
Da, 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 hello.
Hello.
Oh, I knew you were going to mention the cat lady really quick off the bat.
I
didn't realise it would be in the intro.
Very memorable character.
She's a very memorable character. Does she have three boobies?
I think she has six.
Not like that. She didn't that much of a... Do you know what? Is there a time where you go to the Nimbus Paradise City and she's on, but she's had an operation so she's got a cone on her head?
Yeah, I think there is.
It's just like... She's not as good as she normally is.
Yeah. Snorting catnip and climbing up the wall.
Yeah, bless. Anyway, Star Trek V, John, we're on number five.
We're on five.
We're on five. The film that nearly killed the franchise.
Yeah. Yeah, it really did. But you know what? I really like it.
I love it.
Yeah,
yeah,
I absolutely
same.
Love it. I think...
I have such a soft spot for this film.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I think it's got one of the best plots of all.
It's got a really good plot. What I like is it's really played for laughs a lot.
Yeah.
Which, considering it's a film about trying to discover the ultimate answer to life, it's a really interesting juxtaposition to it. There are so many gags in it, the way they... I think because they're just so comfortable with each other now.
Yes.
It's just beautiful.
It's spending time with my favourite crew. That's what I love about it.
Yeah. So this costs $33 million to make. So by Star Trek terms, this is like really the lowest budget they ever had.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it only made 63. So it really was a fucking flop.
And unfortunately, it was a bit cursed because it came out in 1989, which was the summer where... Every other
2.
Big film came out, yeah.
And yeah, Indiana Jones, Last Crusade, and also Batman.
And Batman.
Imagine trying to compete with Batman.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Last of Summer Wine.
That's the mind. But all all the effects houses they used to use for Star Trek all were doing Indiana Jones and Ghostbusters.
Yeah, they had to use a completely unknown, and you can really tell because the Great Barrier is shit.
Yeah, and the little shot of the Klingon stop motion gun that you keep seeing is pretty bad.
It's so terrible, isn't it? Bless him. No, I still don't mind.
I still remember the poster of this, though, the teaser poster, which had a cinema seat dressed like an Enterprise uniform.
No, I thought you said dressed like a cat with three tits.
Yeah, well, I wish. But the cinema seat had a seatbelt on it, and it basically said, I'm paraphrasing it, you'll need this seatbelt because you're going to get blown through the back of the auditorium.
What?
No, not really.
You're going to get blown by God.
By a cat lady.
Did you know that originally they wanted Sean Connery to play Cybok?
Yes.
And that's why they call the mystical place Shakari, Sean Connery.
Oh, that, I didn't realise the connection there. That's really
the
funny.
Entire reason they call it Shakari, because it sounds amazing. A bit like Sean Connery. Isn't that lovely?
That is lovely. I really enjoy that.
So, obviously, we got to talk about the wonderful elephant in the room, which is not so much an elephant, but this is, of course, Shatner's movie. He directs it.
Yes.
He writes it.
Yes.
Well, he tries to write it, and they go, no.
But he got the idea from... He was just flicking through the telly one night, and he saw a TV evangelist, and he thought,
That would be which is so cool, because his attitude to Cybok for the whole thing is, you fucking charlatan con man. I love it. Mm. Yeah. Mm. I don't think it's got the strongest opener.
You mean the beginning of in the desert?
The very beginning.
Yeah.
Because basically it's just like Duncan Goodhue just with a fucking pellet gun looking for like making sandcastles. I don't know what's going on.
Duncan Goodhue looking for his prized trunks that he buried while drunk 10 years ago.
Duncan, as we know, often buries his prized trunks, much akin to the squirrel.
When he's having his sleep nightmares.
Yeah, but often forgets where they are. That's the problem. Because it basically starts with that, and then a man comes on with a horse and goes, let me take away your pain. And you sort of go, huh?
And he gets off the horse, and it's Benny Hill, and he does that on his head.
Because he's got such a head, isn't he?
He has.
And massive gums.
He looks a bit like the Hills of Eyes man, but not as distinctive looking.
Yes.
He was, ironically, in Star Trek 4 as an alien.
He is? Mm. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It is a genuinely weak opener.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there you go. That's just what it is. I think the whole idea is that because when Cybok pulls his hood down, you see pointy ears and then you see him laugh and you go, hang on, Vulcans aren't supposed to laugh.
Yeah.
And then it starts. But at least we've got Horner back in.
No, it's Goldsmith.
Oh, is it Goldsmith? Sorry. Yeah. Goldsmith. Yeah. That's what I meant.
So he's back from, he did the first film and now he's done this one.
I don't mind the soundtrack to the
film. I think it's great. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good fun.
Bit confusing because by now Next Gen's going, isn't it? And that's also using Goldsmith's theme. So you'd think they'd want to get away from that, but never mind.
Maybe they're just desperate for maybe new fans or to get its popularity. I don't know.
That's a good
point. Was Star Trek ever waning? I don't know. I don't think it ever waned. It always had such a core.
I think maybe in comparison to the Next Gen, because ironically, you know, even though Patrick Stewart wasn't a young man at this point, he's younger than Shatner, isn't he? So.
Yeah.
Maybe they're worried that people are going to look at these lot and go, they're too old. I mean, they are too old, but...
They are, but I still like the practical special effects in the films rather than the first three series of Next Gen, where the fucking Enterprise looks like a conference centre.
Yeah.
It's all carpeted, and their warp effect is just the worst I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's really bad.
It stretches.
Because the first three series are basically, without realising it, an identical copy of the British Empire. With Deanna Troi behind the desk.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
Geordie LaForge, yes, Mr. Britas. Mr. Picard.
Oh, my God. Oh. Jesus Christ. Yeah. Cybok, he's on his space horse. Because it has got a little horn.
Got a little horn.
It's got a little horn.
Yeah. And he says that this is Nimbus 3, which is, he says, the planet of galactic peace. Where weapons are forbidden.
What a shit-o for a planet of peace. You'd want it to be all lush and verdant.
You would. I don't understand why anybody's there. I mean, the ambassador people are there for obvious reasons and they're fed up, but why would anyone else want to be there?
David Warner's initial reaction when sexy Romulan Buster walks in, he's almost pulling his trousers down like, God blimey.
He's like, oh, fuck hell. It's been a long time.
Christ! Oh, dear.
But yeah, so he's a Vulcan and he laughs for ages.
Yeah, big old laugh. And then we get the opening credits.
Oh, lovely. Yeah.
Which is lovely. Music's lovely. Looks lovely.
Mm.
Yeah.
And then after the credits, we get Kirk, Spock and McCoy. They're in Yosemite National Park and Kirk's climbing a rock.
Oh, now, this could so easily go into naff, and maybe it does, but it don't matter, because this is just, like, so fucking tender and sweet.
I love it.
All of it.
All of
it. It's so beautiful. First thing you see is Bones in double denim.
Yes. With a little cravat type thing.
With a little cravat, like he's about to go to San Francisco do some cruising. Mm-hmm. And he's nervously watching Kirk.
Yes.
Who's climbing a mountain in Yosemite with no ropes.
No ropes.
No.
And then Spock appears and on his hover boots.
And Kirk does a beautiful double take, like, "Way!"
And he asks him why he's climbing a rock. And then Kirk says, "Because it's there."
Because it's there.
Mm.
Yeah, which is great. And Spock doesn't really understand that.
No, but he's
and then says, "You better be careful." Thing is, well, if you didn't distract me, then I wouldn't. And then he falls. Yeah.
Really,
down he goes.
Really bad effect when he's falling. But never mind.
Terrible effect. And then Spock zooms down with his hover boots, and the whole procedure of him doing that and then holding him doesn't never quite looks right.
No,
it looks like a Peter Pan like live, but one of the wires has been snapped and they're just dangling in the wrong place.
It's like that Trek that went wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Except funnier.
Yeah. But he does grab him, like, literally 1 inch before Kirk is splatted. And then Bones runs up and just says, "You really piss me off."
I think this is, like... Because every kind of Star Trek film features on one of the crew, particularly. Obviously, this is Kirk's film, because it would be, because it's written by Shatner and directed by him. But I think this is a really good Bones one as well.
This is Bones'... he gets the most to do, I think, in any of the films, doesn't he? Yeah.
And Scotty, which we probably shouldn't talk about too much. Because they've just decided from minute one, Shatner's turned to him and gone, "What if you were fucking Uhura?"
I think you're probably fucking Uhura. And also when you're not doing that, you're a fucking clown.
What?
Is that, what? I invented the Klingon language. Yeah, I know, but in this, you're fucking Uhura and you're a fucking fat clown.
And you know what? I've just thought about it. When your ashes get sent up to space in a spaceship, spaceship's going to blow up and you're going to fall on a mountain and no one's going to find you. How about that?
Yeah.
And he's like...
Your ashes are going to fall on an eagle's nest, but on a recently hatched eagle. It's going to have ash all over its eyes.
And when they climbed up to retrieve him, the eagle had somehow imbibed his ashes and suddenly turned into a tiny little bird version of Scotty, like really fat with a little moustache.
With a tiny twig wrench. Going, "She can't eat dick much more than nest." And then somehow bumps his head on an egg. Anyway, we'll get to all that. And that will be explained, keen listeners.
Yeah. He's also carrying another dead bird going, "Look what you've done."
He stayed on his perch while the others ran. And badly burnt. Eagle. Oh, Jesus Christ.
But we cut to Paradise City on Nimbus 3.
Paradise City. Took 5 weeks to make, apparently.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it took 5 weeks to make and it was 38 degrees.
Oh, God. That's a strange angle to build it at.
Yeah.
Take me down to Paradise City where the...
Wait, hang on, I'll carry on singing. Where the grass is way!
There is no grass and the cat's got a titty.
The cat's got three titties.
Did you enjoy the fact that the pool table is a pun?
I love the fact that the pool table is a pool. Yeah. That's an impossible game to play, isn't it?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's
an impossible game to play.
They should have like a little Dennis Taylor swimming in it. Little water wings on.
It should have been famous snooker players all their faces on the balls. But no.
No.
Due to budget restrictions and the fact that they don't know English snooker players, they didn't do that.
Are there any famous American pool players, though? I don't think there are.
No. Cool Hand Luke, that's it, isn't it? That's it. I like it when, when the ambassador walks in, someone stands on the cat's tail.
And the cat goes, "Meow!" That's right. And
she's doing a sexy dance on the bar.
Yeah, and they're all just looking up going, "Phew."
God, last week, you should have been here last week. She had a cone on her head.
Oh, I wouldn't mind littering her.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
It's horrible. So all the ambassadors meet. David Bourne is like, God, blimey!
And he's named St. John Talbot, which sounds like a Sid James character.
St. John Talbot, yeah. That's very... don't understand. Why is he an Edwardian colonel name? I don't get it.
And also, he's in the next film as a Klingon.
Yes, I know. Well, he was apparently it was Shatner that persuaded him to do it and said, if you do it, I'll stick you in another film as well.
Oh,
and that's why David Warner agreed to do it.
Well, it's never a bad thing.
Because when Shatner said, do you want to be in this film, it had three lines and then never be in it at all. Mm. He's like, not really. And he said, well, I'll give you a bigger part in the next film.
Good.
Knowing full well that he probably had no cachet to promise that.
Not, and David Warner not knowing that he was about to plunge a stake through the heart of Star Trek as a franchise. But they got away with it somehow.
Yes, somehow. So they all meet, the ambassadors meet.
Yeah, there's David Warner, who's an ambassador from, they call it Terran, don't they? So Earth.
Terran, I guess. Earth.
Chris Terran.
Chris Terran, hello.
Romulan. Who's the lady?
Sexy Romulan lady.
Sexy Romulan, and a big fat Klingon.
Yeah, his intro is a big burp to tell you he's Klingon, which is actually great. Nothing wrong with that.
I mean, he's our friend, as we find out later.
Yeah, he's a goodie, isn't he?
He is. Yeah, not Bilodi.
No, he's Bill Goody.
Bilodi would have been an excellent Klingon, though. Here's the Klingon ambassador.
Well, he would have been looking for the Scotty bird, wouldn't he?
He would have been looking for the Scotty bird. He'd be like, Scotty bird, back up back, Scotty bird, back up back, where have you gone, back up back.
Curse of Bilodi, of course, singing whatever he does. It's terrible.
In a chemical toilet, in a chemical toilet.
I think Bilodi's in that chemical toilet.
Getting on train, trying to find a seat. Do-da-ba-ba-do-boo.
Shush, please, this is a quiet compartment.
Bilodi
also, I'm in the quiet compartment!
Bilodi also cursed that everywhere he goes is in fast motion.
Yeah, he's in slight fast forward.
Yeah.
And just saying everything that he does.
Rummaging in my pocket because my ball's sticking to my thigh.
Bill, we can
and
hear
he's also
you.
Cursed
can hear you.
Every time he goes down anyway, like on stairs, or if he falls or he trips, he turns into a dummy and then cuts back to a real person as well.
Which some may say is the next evolutional trick, like that's his X-Men thing.
Yeah, that's his X-Men
thing. He can always fall off high heights as a dummy and then reappear as human.
I love it.
So what can you do, Bilodi? This.
Right. Fucking Wolverine picks him up and chucks him at Magneto. And then he lands on top of him and cuts back to being Bilodi.
Because we're just like... Thrown at Magneto. Oh, he's singing it now.
Anyway, the Klingon ambassador. Yeah, so Cyborg and his men then invade.
They invade by pushing down what is possibly the weakest gate defense system ever. It's made of some twigs and bones.
Yeah. Yeah, if any wolves are in the area.
Oh, ridiculous. Yeah. So he captures them and they're like, well, you know that as soon as you capture us, the Federation will probably send a starship. And Cyborg's like, that's exactly what I want.
I want to use the toilet.
And I'd like to use the toilet, please.
Toilet's currently engaged.
Oddie, get out.
For sake.
Fucking Oddie being in this film that he's not in.
Meanwhile, ridiculous. Back on the Enterprise.
Meanwhile.
We've got the new Enterprise that they were given at the end of 4.
They're giving it a shakedown.
Yes, but nothing works on it. The doors don't work.
No, it's all comedy.
The transport
and this
doesn't
is
work.
Suddenly where you get the Scotty and Uhura planning shore leave together. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, because they're all on shore leave. Scotty and Uhura are talking, and he's saying he hasn't got time for shore leave because he needs to fix his ship because it's in a terrible state.
Everything's going wrong. Everything's like...
And then you get a red alert.
Yeah, and they just think it's a ship faulty, and Uhura's actually, no, this is real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they go, well, we'll have to cancel shore leave. So they then radiate. We then cut to Sulu and Chekhov, who are wandering around in the woods for some reason.
I always presume they were sort of hiking nearby the rest of them.
That's
or was it that they were so snooty and like don't like them? They're like, no, you have a holiday wherever you want it.
Yeah.
Like, they just don't tell them where they are.
Yeah.
Don't really know.
Because I always assume they're just like 10 metres down the road from Spock and Kirk and McCoy.
Yeah. I always thought they were together. But when you see the camp scene, it doesn't seem like it's set up for 5.
No, definitely not.
So...
Yeah, so they get a message, and we get off a second bit of comedy where they
get
do
another
the...
lovely bit of comedy moment, which isn't very good, but
we're in
know,
a blizzard.
Fine. Yeah, Chekhov just goes to convey blizzard.
And Uhura goes,
like, it looks like it's
in
wonderful.
The transport.
Are you farting in each other's mouths, you pervs? And they're like, no. Yeah, and she's like, well, it looks like it's balmy 38 degrees, you fools. And they're like, and then you're just like, oh, thank God the sun is out.
And I'm sorry I pulled my cheeks apart to break wind and made that noise.
So she goes, don't worry, fellas, your secret's safe with me. And they're like, well, it's all right, because we've got something on you. We know you're fucking Scotty, so...
But also the way she says your secret's safe with me sort of means that they've gone off together in the woods to have sex. Like Brokeback Mountain sort of thing. Yeah.
But now we do cut to the most beautiful campfire scene.
Yes.
Oh, and it's so lovely. They're making the traditional stew of beans.
Stew of beans.
It's McCoy's
secret
old
recipe.
Family recipe full of Kentucky... Is it
Tennessee
whiskey?
Whiskey.
Of course it's booze. He's always smuggling booze, isn't he, Bones?
Yeah, I like that Spock says... I have no choice but to sample your beans.
I have no choice but to sample your beans. It's so good.
Out of context, also, sounds awful.
When they try and sing Row, Row Your Boat, he's like, because, you know, we're having fun. And he's like, oh, I didn't realise we were trying to have fun. And in the meanwhile, Bones is just like having an embolism of hatred towards Spock.
He said, I liked you more when you were, before you died.
It's like, that before he was alive. It's so funny. It is so funny. I think they missed a trick, though, because this would have been an ideal Blazing Saddles moment, where they could have all farted around the fire.
Yeah.
That would have been nice. Imagine, I reckon if Spock farts, it's almost like a delicate trill, like a... But it can kill up to 10-mile radius.
Yeah. Like all the...
like
animals.
Birds fall out of trees. Yeah.
A monkey falls into the fire.
An elephant that wasn't there.
Scotty bird.
Scotty's tiny dead animated bird. It's so lovely. They're trying to explain row, row, row your boat. And I love that Spock's only attempt to join in is with this amazing newfangled gadget that just pops out a marshmallow.
I love that.
It's basically a bag for a marshmallow.
Yeah.
I love it so much. And they try and explain row, row, row your boat. And he's just staring at them like, I don't even know what you're talking about.
And then when they're about to go to sleep, he says, Captain. And he goes, yeah. And he goes... Life is not a dream.
Life is not a dream. Yes, it's so lovely. Life is not a dream. Like he just remembered. And they try to go see, but suddenly Uhura's there to pick him up.
Well, before that, we have the Klingons there in this. I don't really know.
We get the tiny Klingon bit. Yeah.
I prefer we don't have Klingons in this film.
I know, and it's a bit bolted on, isn't it? I suppose they just wanted some extra jeopardy. I don't mind the payoff of it, because it's, again, done for laughs. Mm. And I kind of like the idea that he's just this young buck. He looks like he might be in the band Foreigner.
Yes, yeah.
And they're just shooting debris for fun, aren't they?
Yeah, they're shooting satellites. Captain Klar, his name is.
That's right, Klar. Yeah. And he hears the message that that all the ambassadors have sent out, like, we are in trouble, come help us. And then he hears that the Enterprise might be intercepting and thinks, a chance at Captain Kirk will make me possibly the greatest Klingon in the galaxy. But so he's actively interested now, isn't he?
I'm a bit annoyed about it, though, because it's like the six original crew Star Trek films, five of which feature, four and a half feature the Klingons.
Right.
Just think, couldn't we have someone else?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Could have had Romulans in this one.
Yeah, they never really knew what to do with the Romulans until later on. And just like, no, it's fine. They're like, they are just like evil fucking, you know, Vulcans. That's how you do them. But I don't know. I think maybe, do you think it was like for fan service? They just thought fans aren't going to love it unless we get Klingons in?
I mean, I genuinely think a lot of it's to do with the fact that they could use all the Bird of Prey effect shots from the other films.
That is probably also a huge factor of it, is that they've got all this stuff they want to use. Yeah. But anyway, you've got this little subplot that really comes to nothing, but it's actually quite amusing.
Yeah.
But there you go.
So a shuttle comes to take Kirk, Spock and McCoy back to the Enterprise.
Yeah.
We get the ship malfunctioning. He takes off his jacket and he's got a T-shirt that just says, and you imagine, you read the T-shirt in his voice, go climb a rock.
Go climb a rock.
Yeah.
It's lovely, isn't it? And you always get the standard Star Trek trope, which is, Jim, you're the closest ship in the quadrant. And he's like, really? Every fucking time we're the closest ship in the quadrant? Isn't he in one of the major star bases? There must be other ships in there.
And he says, you know the condition of our ship. And they're like, yeah, it's fine.
It's absolutely fine.
Yeah. But he says, we want to go to Nimbus 3, assess the situation, and above all else, rescue the hostages. And a lovely little Shatner bit, because you can't have Shatner in a scene without him doing something adorable. He sits in his new captain's chair and he looks miserable. And McCoy goes, what's wrong?
It's because the chair's going... Because it's got loose screws.
And he goes, I miss my old chair.
I miss my old chair. Oh, it's so sweet. It's like the end. It's like the very last bit of Fraggle Rock where that one just goes, down a Fraggle Rock.
Yeah.
And puts his head in his hands. That's exactly what Shatner does. I miss my chair. It's so sweet.
And he's having trouble dropping his log. He keeps going, Captain's log, and it won't do anything. Captain's log.
Oh, yeah, and it does a comedy doing. Nothing's working,
So then they get the demands from the terrorists, and we see Cyborg, and Spock has a haunted face.
A haunted look. He looks at him, and even Kirk says, looks like you've seen a ghost.
Yeah.
He says, maybe I have. Yeah.
So he tells them about who he is. He says he reminds him of someone he knew in his youth, a young student who possessed great intelligence, but rejected the ideas of Vulcan and was ultimately banished.
And was also a fuck machine.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what?
Well, as we'll find out later, like Spock's dad, right?
What?
We talked about him being very boring, but it's all on the surface, isn't it? It's like ducks. All on the surface, quiet, but underneath...
Yeah, that's the Vulcan way, isn't it? Yeah. They wander down a corridor to say, good morning, good morning. Mm. But as soon as they go into their quarters, the door closes, they're like, go blimey! You know, they just get very emotional.
Yeah, that's right. So then Kirk and everybody, Kirk, Spock and McCoy go down to the planet's surface with Uhura.
Of course, with Uhura, because she's vitally needed now.
Well, we know why now, because Kirk's got a plan. That Chekhov's going to pretend to be the captain and communicate with them while these lads go in on the ground. And you're very popular this evening.
Sorry, I've just muted that. I beg your pardon.
That's all right. So they go on the ground and they're going to kind of take a ground offensive.
Mm.
And offensive being the operative word, because they need to distract everybody. So they get Uhura to do a sexy fan dance.
They get Uhura to basically do the Macarena.
Yeah. And all the men are like, oh, bloody hell.
Carl, look at this pensioner with two fronds. Mm. I mean, they'd be brushing in the sand, wouldn't they? Come on. And she's like, hello, boys. I always wanted to have a captive audience. And they're all like, I don't know whether to tuck some money in her pants or give her some synatogen. However, it gives her something fun to do.
Yeah, because it's pretty much the last thing she does in the film.
It is. It's such a shame because before that, where she does that lovely sort of like that bit where she's got the young kid on that crappy little outpost and she sort of goes, get in the cupboard and all that. And she's like, you want adventure? You got it. It's such a glorious moment for her.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is a real sort of like, okay.
Yeah.
Fine. I don't know.
So
it is what it is.
And because this is a William Shatner film, everyone has to ride a horse because he loves riding horses.
Yes. And apparently that's what they were all really. Really worried about that because it was Shatner that really could only do it. Yeah. And all the rest of them were like, fucking hell.
So they ride in on the horse and everybody lets them in because they're now dressed like the people they've taken the horses from.
Yes.
And it's only when they go like, hang on, what's going on? They shine a spotlight on them and see that they're not who they were.
And then bedlam erupts.
Bedlam erupts and Kirk fights the cat lady.
Kirk fights the cat lady.
Yeah. How does he kill her, Paul?
Throws her in the pool.
Throws her in the pool game.
Throws her in the pool game. Yeah. It's terrible, isn't it? Well, cats hate water as well, we know.
They do, actually, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah, so that'll do it. And on his way, he's like, Kirk is thumping people and scrapping and a punching. I love the bit where Spock is approached by a guard on a horse and gives the horse a Vulcan neck pinch.
Yeah.
That's truly beautiful.
Fantastic.
I love all that.
And they finally get into the Paradise City and they're like, hey, ambassadors, we can go now. And all the ambassadors pull guns on them.
Yeah.
Because they've been brainwashed.
They've been mind-bothered by Cyborg, who can take away their pain. Yeah. which sadly doesn't quite work because later on he does it to Bones, and then Bones goes, "No, I'm still not joining you." But yeah. Anyway, we won't worry about that.
No. So no. Then discover the cyborgs behind it all, and he wants the starship.
Yeah.
So well, while they're in the shuttle,
he meets Spock and goes, yeah. "Like, will you join me?" And Spock's like, "No way! You've committed so many crimes." He says, "Well, I'm about to commit one more. Yeah. I'm going to steal your ship." Kirk's face furious.
Yeah.
Nobody steals Kirk's ship.
So they go out back up in the shuttle because the transporter's still not working.
Yeah.
And while they're on their way, they realise a bird of prey is in the vicinity.
Yeah, the one who wanted to hunt down Kirk, he's in the vicinity, but he's cloaked and getting near. They can't risk bloody lowering the shields to beam them in as normal. And also the teleport isn't working because the ship's fucked. So they have to land manually.
Well, Kirk does a really clever thing there. He communicates with the Enterprise knowing he's being listened to sort of indicate that he's on the shuttle, not on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
And then he says, "We're going to do emergency landing plan B.
B
as in barricade.
Barricade." And they're like, "Oh shit, he's going to crash the ship."
Yeah, because they haven't got enough time to get in the tractor beam because it'll leave the ship uncloaked. So they're just going to go unshielded. So they're going to go in really quick.
Yes, so Klingons can get them. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they're going to fly in manually.
I know the effect is a little ropey, but it's still really good fun.
I love it. I don't care.
I like the jeopardy of it. I love it when it screeches in and then that little big elastic band net. Just catches it. Yeah, big net thing. Also, we should say, we're talking about endearing moments. Mm. In the previous shuttle bit, when they originally go, not when they go to the planet, but when they're approaching the Enterprise,
there's
that beautiful bit with Shatner just staring at the Enterprise going, "All I ask for is a tall ship and a star to guide her by, steer her by."
Yeah.
Oh,
it's a sort of echo of that bit in the first film, isn't it?
Where he's, it's so beautiful. It's like a little reprise of the love. But I just love the way he says it. "All I ask for is a tall ship and a star to guide her by.
And a big pair of boobadoos.
And a big pair of cat titties." And that ruins it all.
Cat titty.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
So, yeah, they get in, and then in the kerfuffle, Cybox dropped his weapon.
Yes, because they basically crash, so everyone's sort of semi-conscious on the floor, and then there's a sort of tussle for the gun.
Yeah. And Kirk...
Cybox grabs it, though.
We've seen Kirk, up to this point in every film and TV show, sort of overpower people quite easily. And he goes to grab the weapon off Cybox, and Cybox just kicks the shit out of him.
Because he's half... Well, he's Vulcan, isn't he? So, he's super strong. Yeah, and that bit's really cool, the way he lifts him and throws him around.
Yes. And what's great is that the gun then falls at the feet of Spock.
Oh.
And Kirk's like, "Shoot him." And Spock says, "I can't."
I know. And Kirk's face.
He's livid.
This is the first time you've ever seen Kirk livid with Spock.
Yes.
He's never been livid before.
He demands to know why, because they get sent to the brig. They all get put in the brig.
They get put into the brig. Yeah.
Not the man from Doctor Who. They don't go in his
No.
bum.
No. No.
Put these men in the brig.
Nobody can escape from that bum either, no. apparently.
So tight.
It's an unescapable brig, so we're told. However, it clearly isn't. But that's fine.
It's an unescapable brig, and it was tested by a man with pointy ears and a bad temper, or a bad something or other. And they do the joke about, no, it was just pointy ears and big dick.
Just pointy ears, yeah. And a huge dick, by the way.
Yeah. So then he says to them, look, the reason I couldn't kill Cyborg because he's my brother. And they're like, yes, I know you Vulcans are close. And he goes, no.
No.
He's my actual brother. And he's like, no, I don't know, that's a lie, Spock, because you haven't got a brother. And he goes,
Well,
he's my half-brother.
And Kurt's like, oh, for the love of... And actually says, why didn't you just tell us that in the first place?
Yeah. I don't know why you've been...
But he's like, I didn't think it would be...
Yeah.
It's actually none of your beeswax.
Oh. Turns out my dad was a right shagger.
But here's the lovely bit. This is the first time you ever see Bones leap to Spock's defence. Because he goes, you should have shot him. And Bones is like, he can't shoot his own brother, Jim. Don't be such an arsehole.
Yeah.
And it's the first time you ever see Bones do that for Spock.
Well, you know Jim would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So Cyborg then begins to brainwash the crew. And I've written here that his costume is like Tron via a Blue Peter appeal. Because it's like a Tron costume, but it's covered in like different coloured bottle tops.
Yeah, it's a bold choice, shall we say.
He's good, though, isn't he?
He is really good, yeah.
Apparently, and again, this just sounds like Shatner just watches telly all the time and does nothing else.
Yes, he just watched him on TV, didn't he?
Yeah,
I like him.
He'll be good, yeah.
Yeah. I thought, and I don't know, I always kind of thought it would have been interesting but the thing is, Shatner would have hated it, if they gave Cyborg also for Leonard Nimoy to play. Like a sort of twin brother look.
Twin brother thing, yeah, that would be fun.
Or slightly different look, you know, and do it like that. But
Him with the goatee, you know, the evil Spock look.
Yes, exactly. Something like that, I think, would have been a really brave move. But
a goatee and the
Shatner
hair from the first one when he's doing his religious ceremony. And he's got the long
hair. Yeah. Or he's got Uhura's hair. Or whatever. He's got Uhura's hair, one of Chekhov's eyes, Sulu's nose.
And the cat tits.
And three cat's tits.
Yeah. The Cyborg,
all on his face.
Cyborg does a big message to the ship saying... Look, you're all wondering what's going on, but I'll tell you, we are going to the mystical planet of Sean Connery.
Yeah, and they're like, what?
Yeah. He says there lies beyond the Great Barrier a powerful energy field at the centre of the galaxy, and if we get through there, we will meet our creator.
Wow.
Who has many names.
Yes, many names.
Yeah.
Many names. And they again, there's a massive gag opportunity here, because they go... On Klingon, it's known as Bak Chak Fa or whatever. Oh. They could have said, like, they could have made up an alien and said, like, and on the Transmusian planet of Ajax 9, it's called Fanny Bam.
Yeah, Fanny Bam.
Fanny Bam Bam.
Fanny Bam Bam.
It's called Fanny Bam Bam.
David Warner will go, my planet also has a similar name for him.
So I presume Cyborg's been spending most of his time now just so, because he gets Uhura, doesn't he? And is it Sulu as well? Mind bothered by
and
him.
And Chekhov.
Chekhov's having none of it, because Chekhov's been pretending to be the captain.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah.
Whilst Kirk was down on Nimbus 3. And Chekhov's having none of it.
Every time someone says Cyborg, I think of that McAuliffe program sketch about the period drama where everyone says sideboard and that woman goes, Cyborg? so then they're in the back in the brig and we start hearing a tapping on the wall.
And they can't make it out.
This is a primitive form of communication called Morse code.
Again, this is all played for laughs. Yeah. They're like, S-T-A-N-D-D, stand, B, stand back. And then they all looked at each other and go, stand back? There's a little explosion and then you get Scotty going, have you never seen a jailbreak before?
You get a little explosion and then his Willy
comes through. Tiny explosion.
It's a Willy comes through the hole. Have you never seen a glory hole before?
Like, no, we haven't.
I thought you might like to suck on my Willy.
No, we're fine. We've got things to do.
Scotty, are you all right? No.
No. Uhura is very kinky.
But he doesn't do that. He breaks them out.
He doesn't do that. Jailbreak.
Yeah.
But because nothing's working properly, they've got to get up to the bridge to take over. But they've got to go up a huge lift shaft, elevator shaft.
Well, we get the next gag, don't we? Because they need to send this distress signal. And then they say to Scotty,
God.
How do we get to Turbo Lift 3?
Oh, yeah, of course.
And he says, well, it's like two rights, one left, go forward, second on the right, forward, past the thing, and then it's there. And they're like, Scotty, what would we do without you? You're a genius. And he goes,
I know this place like the back of my hand. Hmm. And then hits his head.
He knocks himself right out.
Right out.
To the point where when they find him later, he's got a big gash on his forehead.
Yeah. And he's become like one of those weird brain injuries where he wakes up, but now he sounds Chinese.
Yes. They had to dub him.
They have to dub him. It's terrible.
He's like, oh, cup and cock.
Oh, dear. No, they don't do any of that.
They didn't do that.
Don't do that. Of course they don't.
This isn't but again, David
Williams. lots of playing for laughs.
Hmm. I think you can understand why this moment in particular upset people, because Scotty is, you know, he's supposed to know the ship, as he says, backwards.
Yeah.
So to just walk into a big pole, fall over. It's a good joke, but it doesn't really...
He
does do a good comedy fall.
For a big fella, he does a good comedy fall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Trekkers take this stuff very seriously, don't they?
I know, but... Mm. Yeah. I still like it, though.
It'd be better if when he fell down, he then was just like...
Well, he shits himself.
Shits himself really horribly, yeah. And he starts leaking out of his trouser leg. And we just stay on that for ages.
That would be better.
And the camera moves over and you see Kirk sat in the director's chair writing a new copy of Tech Wars.
But cuts to Scotty, the nearest room he found with Spock, and he's just wiping his ass on his bed.
Or on his pillow.
On his pillow.
I hope you sleep well, you cunt.
Sleep well, you green-blooded Sassanac. But of course he doesn't do that.
Doesn't do that.
The guys have to crawl up 78 floors of the Enterprise.
Ah, but Spock
up a ladder.
Spock thinks, screw this, I'm running off.
He gets the jetpack boots that we saw at the beginning. Yeah, and then says, can I offer you a lift?
Oh, it's sad, though, because as much as I love this bit, once I've noticed the little arm holding Spock's back, I can't unsee it. There's even a shadow of it.
Yeah, you can't unsee this.
It's like a little gimbal holding him.
Yeah. It's like the fairground thing where you have to bang with a hammer and you bang it and then the bell goes to the top.
That's right.
In fact, there's on the Blu-ray edition that you gave me, lovely gentleman. Oh. On the Blu-ray edition, there's a gag reel and that's all it is. It's Harve Bennett and a few of the other producers and they're cutting that scene with them going up with them with a pretend hammer hitting a fairground thing.
Right, that's exactly what it's like.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is.
And again, you know the person that's written this knows these characters backwards because it's just perfect that Spock goes, I'm sorry, I overshot the floor by one level.
And also there's a sign that says stop.
Yeah. I also like...
Big red letters.
Yeah, I also like that when they go up to get McCoy, he goes, I'll wait for the next car. I think that's a good joke.
That's lovely. Yeah, and he gingerly gets on, but they're too weighted down, so he uses his jet as the boost, and then they nearly decapitate themselves. But they don't.
No.
Yeah.
So then they send the distress signal and they speak to someone from Starfleet, but it's not. It's a Klingon lady pretending to be Starfleet.
That's a good coup, isn't it?
It's a good coup.
That's not normal Klingon thinking as well. It's quite nice to see someone actually going, do you know what? Instead of being all mock jaw, we fucking tear your ass off.
Yeah.
We'll do a little bit of sly subterfuge.
Yeah, but she should have done it like the policeman from Hello, Hello, though.
She really should have done that, yeah.
We will save her. We will send a shittle to save you, Captain Kipton Keck.
We will send our biggest shop at Warp Factor Foove.
Kipton Cack. Is Spork with you?
Is Speck with you?
Yeah.
And Buns.
I don't know what's going on at Starfleet. Sounds like someone's had a stroke.
That's her only frame of reference is Bostrom. Which, to be honest, she could have raided the archives, and that's the first thing she came across was the British sitcom Hello, Hello, how to speak Terran English.
Maybe we sent that up in a shuttle.
Yeah, maybe that's the... Maybe Bostrom's work is the first thing that aliens see.
Because they did send up a couple of records in the 70s, didn't they, in a satellite? A probe.
Yeah.
Could have sent. Yeah. Could have actually just sent Arthur Bostrom in one.
Why? I mean, now if we approach Bostrom, we went, Arthur, what are you doing lately? He's a Newt Mooch, you know, of course. Wonderful. Well done, by the way, for keeping that up.
Sotting a rind.
Going for a divorce.
Licking for jibs.
I'm very depressed. Right.
I'm thinking of committing suicide.
Would you be interested in going in a shuttle and being thrown into space? Let me thunk about it. All right, well.
I'll fin you, Bok.
Which would have given the first film a completely different thing if Vija was Vuja and it was Bostrom.
Just Bostrom sitting in a chair.
Or even Star Trek 4, where the aliens have intercepted that and now they've come back to find the last Arthur Bostrom. So they have to go in the past to kidnap Arthur Bostrom.
For some reason he's in SeaWorld.
They have to put him in a tank, though, because that's where he lives now.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
What if we made a transparent aluminium armchair for the Bostrom?
What would you say to that, laddie?
Would that be worth something to you, laddie?
No, not really. I don't know what you're talking about.
Who's
Why
Arthur
are you
Bostrom?
In San Francisco trying to kidnap Arthur Bostrom? He's been dead for years.
He lives in Surrey.
He lives in Surrey and he's been dead for 400 years. Still, there you go.
There you go. but then, Jesus. As they're about to leave, thinking they've done their job of sending their signal, Cyborg walks in.
Cyborg walks in and goes, look, come on. Come on. It's time that you guys saw my way of thinking. This is Bones. DeForest is really so beautiful in this.
Yes.
He shines so well. His anger, his pain, his tragedy. Because the whole thing of Cyborg is I can take all the pain that you've been like keeping inside you for years.
Mm.
And he sort of plays it out in front of them almost like a sort of, almost like a hologram or something, isn't it? It's horrible.
It's such a perfect thing as well. If you could have picked something that would haunt a doctor.
And also you go, oh, that's why Bones is a bit like that. Mm. Of course it is. And the idea is that his dad is dying. He's in so much pain. Mm. And Bones, with every piece of medical knowledge he has, can't keep his father alive. And so he does the most dignified thing, which is to end his pain and give him dignity. Yeah. And so he assists in his own suicide, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. And then
like, holy shit. And then the kicker is when Cyborg goes, and then what happened? And he's like, and then a few months later, there was a cure and he could have lived. And wow, what a scene.
It's beautifully done.
Lump in throat, beautiful by DeForest.
Yeah.
Then they move to Spock.
Yeah.
Spock, what's your greatest pain? Apparently it's just being born.
Yeah.
And his father just going, ugh.
His dad called him too human.
Too human.
Yeah. Look at the balls on that, he said. We don't
and
have
then,
balls.
And then he turns to Kirk. And Kirk's like, "You, this again, Shatner." Oh. When he does it well, you're like, no one can touch him.
No.
He does this wonderful thing about, I need my pain. I need my pain. Oh, it's so good. It's what makes me human. It's what he says. He doesn't say it's what defines me. It's what shaped me. I need it. You can't take that away.
Yeah.
So good.
And then you get another kicker when Cyborg's like, okay, well, you can live on your own. I'm going to take these lads with me. And then Spock goes, I can't. I'm not going with you. And then McCoy goes.
Spock does that lovely thing. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Because they love Jim so much.
But then Kirk goes, but hang on. You want to go through the Great Barrier? You don't know what you're doing. I'm the person who knows this ship. And then Cyborg grudgingly goes, all right, you pilot me through.
Hmm.
You get me through it. And maybe in the course of time, you'll change your mind. Because Cyborg still is sort of like a sort of pacifist terrorist, isn't he?
Yeah, because he's not.
He's always constantly going, no guns, no guns. Let's not hurt anyone.
Yeah. And then when they were fighting in the Paradise City, he said, what have you done? This is not what we wanted.
This is not what we wanted, yeah. So he's sort of like, you know, he's the guy that, if he was around now, is the guy that's gluing himself to the roads to stop oil and all that. That's Cyborg now.
He's gluing himself to Arthur Bostrom.
He's gluing himself to Arthur Bostrom, which he's a git oof.
I hope he likes pintomimes. I'm playing Mither Gase. No.
I'm doing Jock on the Boon Stilk.
I'm playing Waddo Twinkie.
Waddo, no, Waddo Twonky.
Twonky, there you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, they get through the Great Barrier, thanks to Kirk.
This what the wonderful special effects. You're like, oh, yeah. Guys, that's we've so come terrible.
I mean, it's not even 10 years since the...
it's not, is it? And it is literally like they've dropped coloured dye into water and then just put some electrical effects on the top. Ugh.
Yeah. Well, did you know, as a side note, did you know that, you know in Galaxy Quest when he fights the big rock monster man?
Right. Oh,
that, that was originally in this film.
Yes, of course, yeah.
Yeah, it's a deleted scene. You can see it. It's really bad.
Yeah.
So that's
well, because apparently it got to the point where the rubber suit was so shit.
Yes.
And they were trying to make it smoulder because it looked like magma. So they literally had guys with tubes blowing cigarette smoke into the costume. And it just looked so shit.
The guy inside died of cancer a year later.
It was bright yellow as well. It was terrible.
They had to put him in an ashtray at the end. Anyway, so they as you say, they make a truce and they go down to the planet, and this is beautiful. You're obviously just filming it in the same desert they filmed all the old Star Trek stuff, but they put a filter on it where it's slightly purple and sort of lavender,
slightly purpley. Yeah, it's still Montana where they were before, but that's fine.
And you get the beautiful Jerry Goldsmith sort of angelic music.
Oh, it's lovely, isn't it?
Everybody on the Enterprise is just going, "Oh my god!" Mm.
Well, the planet looks really lovely. It looks like a big blue testy.
Yeah. But they don't even notice that there's a bird of prey in the vicinity again.
No, well, they're all too busy staring at the screen. And that's actually a really lovely shot.
Yeah.
It's everyone on the bridge just staring agog at the planet. And then the camera just very quietly zooms into the bridge. And right at the back, you just see a monitor flick on with Klingon ship inbound. But no one's looking at it. And you're like, ooh, that's kind of cool.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's lovely, isn't it?
And then we fast approach here. One of my favourite moments in all Trek, I think.
Really? Go on.
Oh, I just love it. I love... But they get down there and there's nothing there and all this stuff grows out of the ground, and then Cybok calls to the god, in inverted commas.
Yeah, we're here. We've travelled a great distance.
Mm-hmm. And he turns up and you just get this beautiful moment of this being basically essentially saying what they want to hear and then just dropping in out of nowhere. How did you get through the Great Barrier? And then Cybok says, we used a starship. And then he says, oh, basically, can I have the starship?
He's like, move it closer, because I quite like... No, he says, can I use my ship to spread my message?
That's
and Cybok's like, of course.
Yeah.
Kirk's immediately going,
brilliant.
What?
Yeah.
And then Kirk immediately goes, I love the way he just goes, excuse me. May I ask a question? What does Gard need with a starship?
It's just brilliant.
That is so brilliant. What does Gard need with a starship? And then he goes, what sort of creature is you? And and then immediately goes, well, you're God. You should know who I am.
Yeah. Don't you know?
Don't you know? So good. So good.
So good. And that's the thing, is that there's a lot wrong with this film, but this spine of it, the plot, is the purest form of a Star Trek episode.
It really is. And also, I remember at the time when Kirk was penning it, they were going, I don't think we should do a Let's Find God thing. It's too dicey even for Star Trek. And then he's going, yeah, but look at what we've done before. Everything we do is about... friendship and life after death and aging and the human condition. It's a perfect Star Trek vehicle, which it weirdly is. It is a perfect story. It's just, I don't know. It's a bit messy, but it's a beautiful mess. And that's why I will always love it.
I think if he'd have given it to like a Nicholas Meyers, which I think he wanted to do.
Nicholas was busy. He was busy doing something else. Yeah.
I think you'd probably have, it had probably got moulded into something a lot more palatable and fun. Not fun. Yes. It is fun. I just mean more coherent.
Yeah.
But I think this is perfect. It nails it perfect. The sound design's really good. The voice of the god is
quite great.
Disturbing and eerie.
And when Kirk goes, and then says, what little creature are you? And he goes, well, you should know. His first recourse is to sort of zap him with his laser eyes. And then that's it. Kirk's like, what sort of a god would do that?
Yeah.
Actually Bones that says that.
Yeah.
What sort of a god would do that?
A malicious attack.
Yeah.
He attacks McCoy as well and Spock.
Yes.
And that's when Cybok realises the error of his ways.
Yeah. And he literally does. He turns around and goes, I'm really so fucking sorry.
Yeah.
I've been delusional. And then has his only recourse. You look like you might be in pain, strange column of light entity. Yeah. Let me share your pain. And steps into the creature.
Yeah, they basically mind bother each... Well, he mind bothers him into submission.
Mind bothers him and he's all like screaming. And of course the crew then take that opportunity to leg it.
Well, at that exact moment, the transporter's mended.
Yes. Well, no, first of all, they get into the shuttle, but the shuttle won't move.
Oh, that's right.
And yeah, the Copernicus shuttle.
Yes.
Not the same shuttle that they do the emergency thing. That's got a different name, Galileo.
Yes.
Yeah, the shuttle won't work, but then suddenly Scotty says the Energizer's working, but only enough for two. Kirk does, of course, what every captain does, which is take Spock and take Bones. They're like, holy shit!
Well, there's two Galileos. There's a Figaro.
Yes.
And apparently they're Magnifico.
Yes. There's also the Fandango, which kept crashing. Yeah.
Hence, can you do the... Yeah, so Kirk's on his own on the planet with this being.
Yeah, which at this point is just an amorphous blob of energy chasing him and trying to zap him.
Yeah.
And this is the bit where they wanted to use the rock monsters, which clearly didn't work. So they
rock monster!
Rock monster!
So then Spock, when he's back on the Enterprise, he turns to the Klingon man and says, I need you to do me a favour. And the Klingon man goes, I've been such a fool. Anything you want me to do, I'll do it. And he goes, well, you get your knob out. I want to see what a Klingon woman looks like.
I want to see it. Has it got ridges on it?
Has it got a head like a Cornish pasty? No. He says, you're the supervising officer of that mad guy in the Bird of Prey.
Yes. I need you to contact him. And he's like, well, I don't know about doing that. And then Spock says something to him, which is lovely. Mm. And he says, damn you, sir, you will try.
Oh, I love it.
Damn you, sir, you will try. Ooh. Oh,
yeah. So then Kirk climbs to the top of the cliff face he's on, and this thing's about to shoot him, and he closes his eyes, because I forgot to mention earlier, he raises a very important point, a beautiful Kirk moment. McCoy says to him earlier, you could have died on that mountain, and he says, I knew I wasn't going to die, because I know I'm going to die alone.
I was going to mention this, weirdly, right at the beginning of the campfire bit, there's a real buzzkill moment, and that's when Kirk just goes, I know how I'll die, I'll die alone.
Yeah,
and
so when
like,
he's on top
shit,
of this
way
cliff...
to ruin a party.
When he's on top of this cliff with this being bearing down on him, he does that thing where he closes his eyes knowing this is it.
Yeah, ready to go.
And then the Bird of Prey comes up behind him, and he must have thought, well, I'm definitely going to die now. And then it fires on the being.
Yes, and blows it explodes, it screaming. And then, but Kirk still thinks, well, I'm still toast, because he literally goes, come on then, you bastard, shoot me.
Yeah, you Klingon bastard.
He's just stood there, isn't he? Yeah. And then suddenly he gets beamed aboard.
And the supervising Klingon man gets
the ambassador who was captured. Yeah,
yeah, to apologise to him.
That's amazing.
Like
he's
a school
kid. Really, it's so. I know it's like, well, because most Klingons, I mean, every Klingon that faces Kirk will always get blasted in their ship somehow in every movie.
Yeah.
In this one, he's just like an errant schoolchild being like in front of the headmaster and going, "I'm very sorry, sir,"
and apologise to Arthur Bostrom.
Apologise, Arthur Bostrom. I'm very sorry, Arthur Bostrom.
Knee problem. He sounds Jamaican now. He's like,
shove it up your ooze.
I'm glad you took that shit. Shot.
And of course, because you always have to have... Shot, by the way, in case you... And they always have to have that lovely... They always have to have a comedy, beautiful Spock moment.
Yep.
Where they go, allow me to... allow us to show you who the gunner was, who blew God away, etc. And there's very slow gzzz as the gunner mantle turns around. There's Spock.
Spock. Beautiful.
Lovely. And I love this because Kirk goes, I thought I was going to die. Yeah. And he goes to hug Spock. And Spock just goes, please, Captain, not in front of the Klingons.
It's so
Again,
perfect.
So many laughs in this film. It's all played for laughs.
Yep.
Not in front of the Klingons.
It's so funny. And then they have the bit where they're all together again on the the mothership thing.
Yes.
The base, the headquarters.
Yeah.
And McCoy gives the Klingon guy some Tennessee whiskey in his drink.
Yeah.
Which is fun.
Yeah.
And then Spock's like, you know, it's really sad. I've just met my brother again and now I've lost him. I don't know how to feel about that. And then Kirk says, I lost a brother once. And then looks at Spock and goes, luckily I got him back.
Oh,
and then McCoy
on.
Goes, I thought you said men like us don't have families. And then he looks at McCoy and goes, I was wrong.
I was wrong because you're my family. Oh, my God, come on. It's just so lovely and innocent and sweet. Mm-hmm. You're my family. I know we don't get along sometimes, but God damn it, I love you. And then we cut to them all back doing shore leave again. And it just ends with them just singing Row, Row, Row Your Boat as the camera gently drifts away. And
but this time, Spock's playing the song on his like Klingon guitar thing.
Spock's got his space mandolin, whatever it is.
They're doing the round perfectly. They're all doing the...
He's doing it lovely. And here's a lovely thing. They shot the... When Shatner was doing it, they shot the Montana campfire scenes last. It was the last thing they did.
Mm.
And when they finished shooting, that's where they had the rap party.
Oh,
isn't that lovely? And apparently Shatner insisted on that. Like, and we're all done, and here we all are now outside around a big fire, and that's where they all came and had their wrap party afterwards.
Oh, that is lovely.
That's really lovely. Again, family. It's such a lovely notion.
Yeah,
it's such a brave thing to do in sci-fi.
It really is. And
to just celebrate mates and family and aging and death and. A feeling of being inadequate. Take on those big weighty issues, which is why Star Trek's always been, I hate that term, but the thinking man Star Wars.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
It just is.
And it's very important in terms of the relationships of these three characters, because you had Wrath of Khan, which established that they're all old friends. Then you had Search and Spock, where they had to find Spock again and he got his memory back. Then you had Four, where he's behaving like a proper Vulcan.
Yes.
And then the beginning of this one he is, and then by the end he's saying, damn you, I want you to do this. Because he's fallen back in love with these friends that he had for years ago. And it's just...
Exactly.
Perfect film. I just think this is a lovely, lovely film. And it gets... I really can't stand that thing about, only the even numbers Star Trek films are good.
No,
I don't think that's
rubbish.
True at all.
I would watch this over Voyage Home.
Absolutely.
Every time. And I like Voyage Home, but there's not enough sci-fi in Voyage Home for me. Yeah. And it's not in space, so I therefore go... I'd rather watch this than Voyage Home. And Voyage Home's great.
But obviously they say...
And I'm so happy that Shatner got his chance, because he was like, well, fucking Nimoy's done two now, come on.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, he did nearly break the franchise, because it was a complete flop.
It was a complete flop, but I think maybe if it had come out a year later, it would
have done all right. Yeah,
it would have got the right effects, and it would come out not against all these mammoth films.
Yeah.
Not films about mammoths, that would be... Weird.
No, surely not. Although, what was that in 1990? There might have just equally have been like huge
ghost
films. Oh, yeah. Well, there you go. Mm.
But then you could argue that they saved these second or third best for last. So
yes, possibly,
because the next film is extraordinary.
It is. Mm. Yeah, which we will cover.
We will.
For we must.
And it will be a sad day.
It's our first best destiny. Yes, I suppose it was. Well, dare we carry on and go into the... I suppose we do, because we've got to...
Well,
we have to, because also we've got to cover Kirk's...
Generations.
Yeah, we've got to do Generations.
Which belies what he said in
this film.
Dog
shit. Yeah, it really does, yeah.
It's completely... Picks up that bit of the script, wipes his ass with it, throws it in the bin.
It really does.
It didn't even have... He didn't even have the common decency to feature Arthur Bostrom.
Doesn't he have the good grace... Planet Bostrom.
Bostrom would be better than Malcolm McDowell, though.
It would be so much better.
Mm. I hate Generations so much.
It's a really bad film.
I don't like any of the next-gen films, but...
Oh, I think First Contact's really good. Mm. I love First Contact a lot. But then it gets hard.
Well, we'll cover them. We'll cover them.
Yeah, but I think we should.
I'm going to be very sad. I mean, I can't wait to talk about 6, but I'll be sad when it ends.
Yes. Yeah, but they got 6. They got 6.
They got 6, and they should have only got 3, really, shouldn't they?
They really should have. Yeah, exactly. So I'm so happy they got 6.
Me too.
And I just love how it just doubles down with the maybe apart from the last film, it just always doubles down on just the heart of that sense of their family all the time.
Yes,
and that's what I love about it. It just reinforces it every time. Mm. About just good mates that who've got your back no matter what, and that's kind of what it's always about, which is just a lovely idea.
But not only that, you get the double bonus of not only the fact that you enjoy how close they are, you feel close to them as an audience as well, so you feel a part of it, and it's just
absolutely. So the little bon mots that all the characters have are amplified because they've earned it, because you love them so much. So when Spock does the slow reveal, he's the gunner, you cheer a bit. Of course, it's Spock.
Hmm.
In the hands of another franchise, it just weirdly it wouldn't work as much with Star Wars.
No, it wouldn't.
Star Wars doesn't quite have the heart. It has its mythos, but its mythos is a bit just there's good and evil, and that's it.
Yeah.
Whereas Star Trek is so much more than that.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
Star Trek's quite often about thinking a character and then being surprised or deceived by them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Star Wars isn't so much about that. As you say, it's very black and white. But thank you so much, Paul, for joining me on the Final Frontier.
Oh, I loved it.
Not the left ear,
not
the right
ear. I'm so glad we covered as well. Bostrom, we finally got that done.
Thank God.
And of course, Scotty pretending to be a newly hatched chick. I'm so glad we got that covered as well.
The vitriol we'd have got in the comments if we hadn't talked about Bostrom.
If we didn't talk about it, exactly.
Yeah, or the chick. thank God. Or, you know, thank the person who wants to borrow our starship, I should say.
Yeah, thank you.
I've drunk too much wine.
That's all right, I'm drinking wine too. It's a bottle of wine film, this.
It definitely is.
Yeah. Right, well, we'll be back again at some juncture, hopefully this year, to polish off the seven, if you pardon the expression.
The what's it called again, Star Trek? The Undiscovered Country.
The Undiscovered Country.
Mm. It features a cameo from Christian Slater.
Christian Slater. Yeah. And, of course, you've got Christopher Plummer. Oh! That's going to be lovely.
Yeah, well, we'll discuss that very soon. But thank you so much, Paul.
You're welcome.
And until next time, Gidbo.
Oh, yeah, I see. Sidoff.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.